You can go from I should start a podcast to actually starting a podcast with Spreaker. Spreaker's tools allow you to record, manage, distribute, and monetize any podcast idea, whether it's about your business or even your cat. And as your podcast grows, Spreaker helps you manage your success and even monetize it. That means all you need to get started is a microphone and a really good idea. Learn more and get 30% off at Spreaker.com/get started. That's Spreaker.com/get started.
All right, so we are talking books.
We're talking books, rock books specifically.
Okay.
Now, here is a place that you and I are extremely different. I don't read any of them.
Yep.
None. I've read rock books. I've read The Dirt. Do we count Howard Stern? If we count Howard Stern, I've read his books.
I have not read those, but...
Do we count those in the rock book category, sort of?
I don't know if it's a rock book, but it is...
famous person yeah. book, I guess.
Yeah.
I've read his two books in The Dirt. I have a bunch of other ones up here that, like Metal Generation, I did read, but I'm not going to lie. I read it because it referenced the classic metal show a few times in it.
Right.
And anytime they reference me, I got to see what they're saying. So I read that one. And Martin Popoff's books, I have not read them, but I have them for reference because a lot of times that's convenient to have.
Yeah.
You know, so I have those. But for the most part, I get sent, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 books a year.
Okay.
And they all end up in your bathroom.
Yeah.
Because I usually pile them up. I've got one for you in there before you leave tonight, that drummer book.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Got that book, that drummer coffee table book.
Right.
You know, I have that book as well. But I'm not a book guy. I did listen to you threw me the Sammy Hagar book, which would have been a whole lot better if he read it.
I think the guy that read it did a pretty good job.
He was okay, but it wasn't Sammy, and therefore it wasn't as compelling.
Not a lot of those guys do that, though.
I know, but that's why they stink. That's why right. my awesome book, Cause and Effect, Motley Crue, was such a hit, because I did a good read on it. And
sure you did.
Believe me, I realized what a big pain in the dick that was. Holy smokes.
Yep.
Dude, that took me fucking 2 months. 2 months to read 60 fucking pages. It was a bitch.
I have to, okay, sidebar. Remember where you were going with that?
Mm-hmm.
My dad, mm-hmm. as a birthday gift or a Christmas gift
mm-hmm.
to my brother, a big family tradition for us is the Christmas Carol by, mm-hmm. you know, Charles Dickens.
Okay.
My dad read the entire thing at Don DiBiase Studio, Guitar player, Gatlin guitar player. Mm-hmm. So you were saying that your book took you how long?
2 months.
Right. And how many pages was the book?
Like 60.
Yeah. This Charles Dickens novel, which is quote-unquote novel because it's only like 200 pages, 220.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, 70 years old.
Yeah.
It took him about 2.5 days.
Oh. I might have to hire him to do some of my other books. Dude. Because it's so... And I get it. You know, I honestly didn't get it when, you know, going into it, I was like, fuck, I fucking talk 6 hours a fucking week. How hard can this fucking be to read 60 fucking pages? And I mean, it just ends up with a, and then, take two.
Yeah.
And then you start stumbling over the same shit and then it gets in your head.
Yep. Well, it's in your head to begin with.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like, I mean, like, When you record an album, I know you have, you've been in a recording studio with a band when?
I'm a famous Finnish artist.
Yeah, exactly. So you know that when you're singing your stuff, you're like, okay, I got this.
Mm-hmm.
But then as soon as you turn the mic on, it's...
Exactly.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. every record I've ever recorded, all the parts have been worked out. I know exactly what I'm doing.
Right.
And as soon as they hit record...
Yeah, then you stumble.
Then you just go... Oh, fuck. And there's those couple seconds where you're like, son of a bitch. Like,
right. Yeah.
It's tough, man. You know?
It is hard. And the thing for me with, at least with the Motley Crue one, was I threw away a lot of takes that were good. They were good enough to use.
Right.
But they weren't what I wanted. They just, you know, I really tried hard to put emotion into what I was reading. So it didn't just sound like... And then John Corabi stepped to the microphone and sang the song.
Right.
You know, I didn't want that. I wanted it to sound kind of like I would sound if I was telling the story. So I needed the right inflections and stuff. So it it took me a long fucking time. And man, there's people, you know, I have a company that puts out my audiobooks now.
Right.
And they want me to do Call Me Chris and Little Victories. And I am horrified by that thought. I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to go from 2 months to do 60 pages. How long is it going to take me to do 350 fucking pages? Right. It's going to take me a goddamn year.
Well, how do you feel? Like, let's back it down back to the basis of the books.
Yeah.
How are you going to feel? Because I know, like, you and I, again, we talk on a personal level so many times. Mm-hmm. How are you going to feel? Like, the Call Me Chris book, I mean... Like, Little Victories is okay. Like, that's basically, like, the hardest thing, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the hardest thing was the fact that you were, where I am sitting right now, you were 50 feet away.
Oh, yeah, with a gun in my hand.
With a gun in your hand, ready to fucking just, like, spray brains across the fucking yard.
Absolutely. But
that's difficult. But, the Call Me Chris book, you told me in private conversations, which now I'm going to bring out into the public, you know.
They're not private anymore.
I don't give a shit.
Dude, like, that, you told me, and we talked on the phone a few times, and you did get pretty emotional.
Oh, yeah.
When you were writing it, like,
weepy.
It was, yeah, it was really difficult for you.
It
so
was.
How do you think you would feel to have to do an audio book of that to relive it again?
You know what? It's the double-edged sword. I don't ever want to read it again.
Right.
I've gotten myself to a place where it doesn't even seem like it was me anymore.
Right.
You know, it doesn't seem like it was me that fucking took that burn.
Yeah.
That took that beating from the fucking molten metal that
right.
that did all that rehab, that did all those surgeries. It seems like it's a story I know. You know, because the memories have truly faded enough. And I do think that it was cleansing in a way to write it. I think that would be intensely hard to do anything other than a straight, boring read.
Right.
And I will not, you know me well enough to know, I will not that.
Yeah.
I will, if I decide to do Call Me Chris, I will invest in it and I will, I will do the mind fuck again for another year
right.
to do it. That's the only way I could do it. I think Call Me Chris would be fucking almost impossible to do.
That's exactly why I asked.
Yeah, Little Victories, I could do that with my,
Yep, that's exactly why I asked that.
Little Victories, I think, would be easier because I'm not in that headspace anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I go back to it sometimes, and I look at Little Victories a little bit more than... I've never once, since Call Me Chris came out, I've never once opened it.
Yep.
It's sitting right there. It's never going to move again. But
dude, I gotta be honest. Like, going to take a piss on our breaks.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pissing, and I turn around, and in that bathroom is the tub.
Yeah.
Where you were, the stuff you were talking about, the grime and the shit coming off of your body. Like, I'm like, that's where that happened. Yeah. Like 20 years ago. You know.
Yeah.
Like that book was 1994.
Yeah. I was
that
here.
Was like a couple months before your accident. I was graduating high school.
Right.
And you were a few months removed from almost
death.
Yeah. And so I go in that, every time I take a piss, I look back in that shower and I'm like, son of a bitch, man. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where Georgetta infamously fucking got knocked out fucking trying to catch me.
Yeah, dude. And you weren't even 450 pounds at that time.
No, I was not. Yeah. But it took her, she took a good thumping.
Yeah. Right.
Too bad it didn't do more.
But anyway, so yeah, the Call Me Chris book, for you to actually do an audiobook of that, like
that one would be tough. Yeah. I don't think I'd have any problems at all with Victories because right. I'm not that guy anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really not that bitter, emotionally ripped up person that wrote that book. I'm pretty good these days. You know,
very much so. Yeah.
Call Me Chris would be.
But I hate to like downplay.
I don't care.
Your like divorce, but the
people
quote unquote scars from a divorce. are not nearly as bad as, you know, 3,000 degrees of molten metal smashing into you and, you
depends
know.
On who
you,
depends on who you are as a person, I guess. You know, the difference between the two is the only one that ultimately had to conquer it was me with the burns. With the divorce, I had kids. I had my own mental thing. I didn't know, you know, I was kind of lost as a grown-up.
Right.
You know, I was a grown-up that was a fucking child.
But, you know, as the book says, you also had the core nine.
Yeah.
You know, I had
people to grab me, but I didn't necessarily reach real far at first.
Yeah.
It took me a little while to fucking get my feet under me.
Yeah.
You know, and with Call Me Chris, with the burn accident, I was ready to fucking charge forward almost the minute I woke up.
Right.
I never had that, my life is over, I'm going to die. Right. I never had that. I mean, I never had, as fucked up as I was, I never had that my life is over moment.
Right.
You know, and my mom always says that to me. She's like, I don't know how you fucking didn't drive through or didn't have that, you know, my that pity party.
Yeah.
And I never did. I mean, from the time I woke up out of the coma, it really was, I remember saying this to Dr. Fratt. You know, he came in the room one day and I was a mess. I was tied up, Jesus on the cross,
right,
to the fucking bed. And they're fucking, they had towels stapled all over my body because they had to keep my body wet.
Yeah.
You know, they had to keep the grafts wet. Yeah. So the way they did it was they took towels, they put them on me, and then they stapled them with a staple gun, all fucking over. And they would come in twice a day and fucking yank that shit out of me and then put new staples in with new towels. It was fucked up. And I remember Dr. Fratt coming in one day, and I just said to him, and I mean, I was a fucking mess.
Right.
And I was like, what do I got to do to get out of here? And he's like, well, why are you even talking about getting out of here? Let's just get you through this. I was like, nah. What do I got to do to get fucking out of here? And he told me, he's like, you got to do this, and you got to do this, and you got to do this, and then you can get out of here. And I was like, all right, fine, fuck it, let's go.
Yep.
You know, I was like, okay, let's go. And I remember Georgetta came to visit me that night, and I told her, I said, look, all I got to do is this, this, and this. Meanwhile, I haven't been out of bed in 2 fucking months. I'm like 6 days from waking up out of a coma, and I haven't even stood up. And right? I'm like, look, all I got to do is this, this, and this, and I can go home. And she's like, okay, dear. Okay, dear. And I fought like a motherfucker, dude.
Right.
The little stupidest, dumbest shit. Like, as an example, it was not a meth lab accident, demon, you fucking jizz bag. I got burned in a steel mill. Furnace blew up.
Does Demon not know that?
I don't know.
She's been in the chat room forever.
She's making a joke, I think. But no.
Well, Demon's a dude anyway. We've already established that like 2 years ago. But
it's Damone.
There it is, Demon. You're a dude and it's pronounced Damone.
It's Damone. But no. You know, one of the things I would not do in the hospital, which is kind of an odd thing, was I would not sit in a wheelchair.
Right.
For anybody, for any reason at all. I was like, you know, as dumb as this sounds, they wheeled in a wheelchair one day to kind of take me to, I used to have to do this hand therapy.
Yeah.
And they would take my fucking hand. They had to reattach all these tendons here in my hand and then teach me how to use it.
Well, dude, I mean, in the music break, when you had that rib, like you pulled a muscle, like in the last segment, like we were out of your front door and I was stretching you out, like, but you couldn't move in certain directions because of the accident. Yeah, like,
the grafts are too fucking tight.
Yeah. So,
but, yeah, I mean, there's limitations, but I don't worry about them. I just drive forward.
Yeah.
But no, what they used to have to do is they would take this fucking, in between my fingers here, this is going to gross you out.
Yeah. It's not going to gross me out.
Well, not you, but people. In between my fingers here, they would take these posts and they would jam them through right here.
Right.
In like right at the base of the fingers.
Right by the knuckle.
Right. Well, just close enough to the nerves that and where the tendons
Ooh,
were reattached. because the tendons were all burned through, so they had to reattach all these fucking tendons. And then they would zap it with an electric shock to make my fingers fucking move.
Right.
And I would end up passing out from this shit because it was fucking painful as fuck, you know? And I was always like, they wanted to stop. And I was like, don't fucking stop, because I knew I had to, one of the things I had to do is make my hands fucking work.
Yeah. Right.
So I was like, don't fucking stop. Just do it. And they were like, well, you're this or that. I was like, put a fucking heart monitor on me, because I started passing out from the pain.
No shit.
And they were like, well, we're gonna stop. I was like, don't fucking stop unless my heartbeat is 180 or something. That's gonna kill me.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit if I'm not awake for this.
Yeah.
Do it. Put a heart monitor on me and do it. And they did. And I passed out many days. And they would put the fucking heart monitor on me and keep on doing it. Because I gave them permission.
Right.
I was like, fuck, if I'm going to die, I'm going to fucking die.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's funny. Like you were talking about this and you like, as we're talking, like, cause we're sitting across from each other in the room, you lifted your hand up and your right hand, the pinky, is permanently bent.
Both of them.
And, but you lift your hand up and went like this. And like, if we could take a picture, if we were to take a picture of that, people would actually see, like, just lifting your hand, like your pinky is just like curled into a C permanently.
It's
like
both of them.
Yeah, and people, like, everyone that listens to the show, you got all these millions of downloads.
Yeah,
I don't think I've ever actually seen that your hand's like actually super fucked up. You know?
I can't do the metal horns.
Yeah,
yeah, I can't because my fingers are fucked up.
If you do the metal horns, it's basically just you throwing up. Like
I do the
index
crooked
finger.
Metal horns. Yeah.
Right. Crooked horns. Yeah.
I'm like, what are those goats that are in the mountains that bang into each other?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
What are those things? Are they goats? I don't know what they're in the mountains.
Like rams?
Rams. That's like I got ram horns.
Okay.
Because they're fucking curved.
A ram, I think, is a male goat or a male
ram,
whatever.
Yeah. I got ram horns.
All right.
But no, dude. And like the fingers, these two fingers, they could fix them. I mean, I could go and get, they would slice this.
Oh, yeah. The tendons and all that kind of crap.
Slice all this out. And I had, for a while, I had the pins that they jammed all the way through the bone.
Ooh.
To straighten it out. And they
could
kept
you
it.
Feel that when?
Fuck yeah, I could feel it. I used to drive Georgetta crazy because it had a ball on the end of it. And I used to twist the ball. It would hurt.
Oh, okay. So it's sticking out.
It would hurt like a motherfucker. But I'd be like.
See, now that just reminded me of the fact that I have a chipped tooth because I finally, after 23 years of singing, banged my teeth off the mic so much tonight.
You're
that
a warrior.
I I'm like, God damn it, now I'm going to be licking the front of my tooth again.
You're a warrior compared to me.
I know, right?
You got a chipped tooth.
Chris, I know you got blown up, but you don't know nothing until you've had a chipped tooth off a microphone.
Yeah, no
motherfucker.
Shit.
Motherfucker. So, anyway.
But no, back to the wheelchair. The thing with the wheelchair is it was made by a company called Invacare.
I'm very familiar with it. My dad has products from them.
Well, because it was Invacare, and I knew that Inva stood for invalid care, I wouldn't sit in the chair. I absolutely would not sit in the chair, and it drove the nurses and Georgetta absolutely fucking insane, because if I had to go to an appointment across the hospital, instead of it being a 10-minute journey where they would wheel me across, they had one of two options. They could take the whole fucking bed, or they could take 2 fucking hours where I would walk 10 steps at a time and then have to lean against a wall or something to catch my breath.
No shit.
And I would, I was in the hospital for 2.5 months. I got burned on December 12th of 94. I left out of there February, whatever the day after the Super Bowl was in 95. February 1st, 2nd, 3rd, whatever the date was. And in that time, I never sat in a wheelchair. Including, they almost didn't let me leave because I refused to sit in the wheelchair to be
wheeled out to the car. Yep.
I told them, fuck you.
It's in the book, right?
Yeah. Well, I told them, I mean, they were like, well, if you don't, then you're not leaving. I was like, the fuck I'm not. I'm leaving. And I'm going to walk out on my own 2 fucking feet. And I did. You know, I wasn't going to be a fucking invalid for anybody. I was not willing to accept that. And it made me tough. It definitely made me tough, man. And, you know,
people, go figure.
People can say whatever they want. You know, I see it all the time that people throw shit about me or whatever. And I'm like, anybody that ever wants to challenge what I've been through to what they've been through, I'll bring that on any day of the fucking week.
Yep.
I've been through a war. I've been burned near to death. Bring it on.
Yep.
Bring it the fuck on.
Yep.
You know, I was burned so fucking bad that I'm in that 90 percentile die. Over 50%, 90% die. I was burned 69 fucking percent. 69! Good number.
Yeah.
But,
all right.
But I was burned 69% and I fucking lived through that shit.
Yep.
So, whatever. Bring that shit.
Well, and like you said, again, and you're a veteran and all that crap, like, Jesus.
People want to, you know, dude, but it doesn't matter, man. I mean, everybody, and I say this to people even now when I, you know, I do, this will be a shock to some, but I actually do some nice things, too. I don't just talk shit on the radio. I mean, I do a lot of counseling and online counseling and phone calls and whatnot with burn vics. And because a lot of burn vics, they just can't get through it. You know, they have the hardest time stepping past it.
Right.
You know, and it is all, you know, dude, I know you've never had any fucking real issue.
No, yeah, definitely.
I mean, if you've ever been through a real, real fucking issue, then you realize that nobody's is worse than anybody else's.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the lesson that I always try to tell people. You know, I talk to so many fucking burn vics that are all like, my life is over and this and that and oh my God, how am I going to... And I'm always like, I took more than you did.
Yeah.
So your life's not over. After I got burned, I built two businesses. I built a successful radio career. I wrote four fucking books. And that's after, and I had less than you. So don't sell yourself short, you fucking pussy.
I have to ask you this.
Yeah.
And I've asked you this off air, but as long as, you know, we're shilling your books right now.
I don't care.
We're not shilling your books.
We're not
shilling.
Anyway, I haven't said one time we're going to buy it.
Well, I know, but we're having an honest conversation, which is one of the reasons I love coming on here. So,
yeah.
Do you think that all the stuff that you've done and your personality and how hardcore you are, I mean, I've known you for shit, like 20 years, man, yeah. Plus, and... Do you think that the way you are now, all the things you've done, would any of that happened without the accident? And I ask that because, I mean, were you that guy before the accident?
No,
or did the accident actually, you know?
No. Dude, let me just tell you.
By the way, this segment basically is me interviewing you about.
That's fine. I don't care. Whatever.
So, anyway.
So, in my book, Little Victories, let me tell you. No.
Yeah. Hey.
No. Before I got hurt, I was an absolute bum.
Right.
Bum. I was working jobs for $5-6 an hour.
Okay.
I was trying to get some IT stuff going. I was working over at ITT, which made car engine parts before they went out of business, for $6 an hour. As an Excel manager, I guess, the guys would scan fucking parts, and then I would take their Excel spreadsheets off of the computers every day and tally it and massage the data and shit. This was one of my fucking jobs for no money. And I had another job, and you know, this is gonna. I don't think I've ever told you any of this stuff, but this is gonna surprise
you. No, I'm hearing
you.
This for the first time.
In addition to that, I worked another job at a warehouse that made screws and corner pieces for picture frames, and I was the guy that went in and did inventory all day, every day.
Fuck off. Really?
All day, every day, I was pulling out bins of screws and counting the screws in the bins. Okay, there's 6,207, manually counting these fucking bins in the screw, like these screw bins. That was my fucking work. And then...
God damn, dude.
And then I worked a job. Then I worked a job at the crematory burning bodies. You know, that was like the holy grail because I was making $5, $6, $7 an hour. I'm working two jobs. I'm working that job by day and Domino's at night.
Well, I remember you telling that story in your book, Cause and Effect, Motley Crue.
Yeah.
Which you can find on...
it's on Amazon, of course.
Anyway, so...
But no, so then I worked at the crematory burning bodies, and that job fucked up my head. I just, you know, the bodies, people don't know it, but bodies come in on airplanes all the time in fucking boxes, little fucking cardboard boxes. And then you open them up to burn them, and it's Mr. Jones just laying there just waiting to get fucking tossed in the oven. And then you have to take this rake thing and rake the fucking meat off the bones halfway through the burn, and it was fucked up.
Wait, should we explain this? Because I kind of want to hear this. And okay, the only reason why I kind of want to hear this, mm-hmm. and Neely makes fun of me all the time for this, but
yeah.
I really do truly hate people.
Yeah.
I love dogs, love mm-hmm. cats. I'm an animal fan. Like, yeah. you know, it's... dogs love everybody. Like, dude, you gonna give me some scratches and some treats? Yeah. Well, then I love you. And that's like, that's my outlook on life. And human beings do not have that outlook. Right. So fuck people. So for me to burn people, like, I think it might have like, yeah, it would get to me if you say you're raking flesh off. But I would also be like, well, at least it's not a dog. So, dude, explain that. Like,
it was so... It was,
there's a dead body, and you have to rake them before they go in the oven or after?
No, after. You put them in the oven.
Well, how do they not burn into, like, ash?
Well, they burn down, but some guys, you know, some women, if they're, you know, fatty deposits or whatever that don't burn right away, or if the bones are thicker or whatever, the shit doesn't all burn off. So we had this thing. It looks like a rake. It's, you know, the flat rakes, not the V rakes, whatever you call the flat headed ones, like you would have at a golf course for a sand trap.
Yep. Yeah.
So you would have one of those, and it looked like a rake, but the other side of it was a big flat, heavy side, almost like a hammer.
Right.
So you would take the rake halfway through the burn. The burn's like 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours, depending.
That's
on
how long it takes to.
Well, it depends on the person.
This is gonna be a
body.
Great segment. How long does it take to burn a corpse?
Well, it's depending on the weight of the person and the body and the, you know,
this
the
is beautiful
shit. So you reach this thing in, and you know, halfway through the burn, and you just go, and scrape the fucking meat off of what's left of the bones. And then if the bones aren't disintegrating, then you flip the thing over and you bang this thing on the bones to smash the skulls and the bones and shit.
Fuck that.
So
really?
It was a fucked up job, man. And believe me, it didn't bother me any. It did not bother me any to see Mr. Jones in the fucking box or whatever. What bothered me was I would start having dreams in the middle of the night of opening the box, and it's my mom or Georgetta or my kid or, right. you know, whatever. And I started having these dreams to where I ended up not sleeping, you know, and it was like, all right, I can't fucking go to sleep because you know, 'cause right. if I do, I'm going to dream about this fucking job. So I ended up having to quit that job, and I quit that job, and I went from that to some other fucking Kelly Temps or some bullshit to do some other job, and I lasted like a month or so, and then I got fired from that for mouthing off. Imagine that.
Yeah, wow.
So then I came home, and I told Georgetta, I said, you know what? The next job I take, I'm just going to take something mindless because I don't want to fucking think. You know, I just want a mindless, stupid, go to work, make my money, go home job. And that's how I ended up at the steel mill. Because it was just mindless work. You go in, you fucking do your time, you go home.
Wow.
And, sure enough, then what ended up happening, I was there a year. I actually, and dude, the only regret that I have, I mean, I don't have too many regrets, but I tore my MCL on my right knee in the end of October, one day before my birthday. I tore my MCL. Okay. I had to go have surgery. I had surgery on the company's dime. I was supposed to be off 2 months. I came back to work because my leg was fucking feeling okay, and I could not afford to be unemployed.
Right.
And got burned the day I got back.
Yep.
The day I went back.
I remember you telling me this off air.
And it's like, motherfucker, you know.
I wish my knee would have been more fucked up.
that's the only regret that I have is I just didn't listen that I could not afford. I mean, I was so broke. I mean, I was on the system and everything. I was fucking eating the government cheese and drinking the government milk, man. I was on the system. I was broke.
No shit.
I was dead ass broke. I had no money coming in. And sure as shit, you know, I mean, I had the disability, which is, you know, nothing when you're making $13 an hour. You know, I mean, what's disability for $13 an hour? $100 a week? What's that for a fucking dude with a kid and a wife?
Right. You know, that's right. That was before Zach and Mike.
Yeah. Well, they were born.
No, I'm saying that's how young you were.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. I mean, they were born after the burn accident because they were like horrified when they saw, you know, me with all the blood squirting all over the place and shit. And, you know,
how old were they when
18 months?
So they were they aware of what was?
Nah, they weren't really. Not really. Kylie was. Kylie knew what was up, but the boys were not. Man, it was fucked up, man. I mean, it was a fucked up. I could tell you horror story upon horror story about fucking. You know, I would be sitting on the couch. I would sit on the couch, and just to sit up and down was just painful because I had a graft that goes across my stomach, and it would bend. And I mean, this was fucking. Just imagine if you took your arm and just raked it with a fucking with a cheese grater.
Yeah,
well, that's what my fucking stomach felt like. And every time I would sit down, it was like, right. And blood would squirt all over the fucking place, and it was just a fucking disaster. So I would sit as long as I possibly could, and thank God for fucking the OJ trial. Because the OJ trial was going on during my rehab. So I would go, I had to do 10 hours a day at the hospital rehabbing, all of which they had TVs, so I would watch the OJ trial. Then I would get home about 6 o'clock at night. I would sit down on the couch, and I was sleeping on the couch at that point. And I would sit on the couch until 3, 4 in the fucking morning, just right. Watching. I would watch till the end of the OJ trial. And then I would fucking watch all the recap shows, Geraldo and Greta Van Susteren and all that other bullshit.
Right.
Because I did, dude, I had nothing else. I couldn't sleep. I was in so much fucking pain, I couldn't sleep. I was taking Percocets 10 at a time when I was supposed to be taking 2.
Right.
You know, I was a mess, and I couldn't function very well, but I toughed it out, man. You know? But to answer your question, I know this is a long, long way around your question.
And we were supposed to talk about books, so.
No, well, whatever. Well, we're talking about my books, anyway, I guess. So. But no, to answer your question, I am very thankful for my accident in that way.
Right.
I would have never amounted to shit if I did not get fried.
Yep.
Because when I got fried, the thing that changed, I had to work so hard to gain any bit of health that I was going to get. My doctor told me from as early as I can remember when I woke up that I had 365 days. And wherever I was at a year from the date of the accident was going to be permanent. There was nothing they could do about it. They could do surgeries and try to fix shit. But ultimately, right, wherever I was 1 year from the date of my accident was going to be what I was stuck with. And for me, I was like, well, fuck that. I'm not going to just fucking sit around and do nothing. I'm going to work every motherfucking day.
Yeah.
And I worked harder than my doctors always were like, dude, enough. And I was like, enough my ass.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, let the guy next door watch fucking Hill Street Blues all night. I can be doing something. I can be squeezing a tennis ball. I can be fucking doing something.
Right.
And I did. I fucking worked my ass off, dude. And, you know, I could tell you horror stories that I don't even think I wrote in the book about fucking ripping grafts. And, you know, I mean, because I used to have to do this thing with my shoulder, especially. My shoulder is really fucked up.
That's the one that we tried to stretch out in the break.
And I know this isn't going to play well for the show, but I was holding a pipe in front of me, an air pipe.
Right.
I was holding it like this. So when the thing blew up, it came like this back, and his arm went up, and I took just a fucking ass load of molten metal
right
under the armpit. Was one of the worst places that it got fucking hit.
Sure, yeah.
And they were like, you know, we had to work extra hard on that. So there was this exercise I used to have to do, that this wheel. They put the wheel over my head, and I had to just kind of pull the thing.
Right.
And I had to reach as high. They would make it higher and higher and higher so I could fucking not reach.
Stretch it out, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the goal, was to make me work. And I would be doing the work, and all of a sudden the nurse would come in, and she'd be like, stop, 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 stop. And I'd be like, what? And she'd be like, look at your fucking shirt. And I'd look at my shirt, and it would be just beat red the whole fucking side.
Right.
Because I would tear the grafts.
Tear everything, yeah.
And I just didn't care. I mean, I knew it hurt, but it always hurt. So it was like, I don't give a shit, you know. Whatever. Is this going to make me better? Then I bleed.
Yeah.
You know, I don't give a fuck. And I'm bleeding anyway.
Right.
And I never did care. I never cared about blood. I never cared about fucking pain. You know, my doctor always says that I had the highest tolerance of pain he'd ever seen of anybody.
Right.
And, I mean, he told me that like 2 years ago, even. You know, the last time I saw him was like 2 years ago. And he told me that he'd never seen anybody that just always said, yeah, do more, do more.
Right.
You know, he was always blown away by that shit. So I fought like a motherfucker. And honestly, that's why I think that I'm as healthy. I'm not real healthy, but... You know, I mean, look, the weight's going to kill me, but the weight is a product of the burn accident.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, people don't know, and they like to say, oh, you fat ass, eat a fucking salad, okay? Well, yeah, there's truth to that now. I ain't going to lie. I eat like shit. You know why? Because it doesn't matter. I got a fucking scar on my goddamn heart.
Exactly. I was just about to say, your lungs are scarred, heart is scarred.
Yeah, my lungs, 33% of my fucking lungs don't work, and my heart has a scar on the sack of that your heart is held in that prevents it from full beating. So anytime I get moving too fast, I run out of breath real quick.
Well, how about the fact that you could kind of understand the lungs being scarred because you breathe, it's where you breathe, so you breathe it in.
I did.
But the heart, how does that get scarred? You must have breathed in so much. That, I mean,
it was the blast of heat.
Yeah. Like,
dude,
that's amazing.
All of this was gone.
Yeah.
Everything was gone to the bone. Fourth degree, baby.
Yep.
To the bone. And, I mean, it could have burned. If it would have gone another quarter inch, it could have gone through my heart.
How crazy is it that your book, and I know this is, like, turned into an interview about Call Me Chris, but...
So what?
Dude, you're my best friend, and, like, we're fucking bullshitting.
Yeah.
Even the book doesn't really truly tell... all of it,
no.
If you want to be honest about it.
Done. I mean, it tells... I hit the highlights.
Yeah. the highlights. Dude, I'm looking at you right now. Your elbow's all fucked in red and all this. Like, oh, my God. Like,
it's all fucked up. I don't care.
Yeah.
But it's like
if people come out to the you know, summer bash next week when Neely and Chris Aiken are hosting with Red Rain and at Fiori's in Worcester, Ohio, you could see what we're talking about.
Of course. but you have to admit, dude, and that's one of the things that I've always fucking been proudest of. I never hide it.
Yeah.
I don't wear shorts. I don't wear long sleeve shirts. I don't fucking wear gloves. I don't care. I don't give a shit.
You don't not wear shorts. You don't. You just said I don't wear shorts. Like no, you do wear shorts. You
yeah, I do wear
fuck.
Shorts sometimes. Yeah. But what I mean is I don't wear short sleeve shirts ever.
Well, yeah.
Or long sleeve shirts.
Yeah.
I always wear.
You don't give a fuck.
I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what? If I'm supposed to be embarrassed because I got hurt at my job trying to take care of my family, well then fuck it. Then color me embarrassed. I don't give a fuck.
Right.
I did what I had to do. You know and. Shit happens to everybody, man, and you know when you look at it, somebody that broke their leg or somebody that fucking had a heart attack or somebody that had an aneurysm or whatever, what's worse? There is no better or worse. Dude, when you busted your fucking mouth in my front yard.
I think that's a little different
no,
than
no,
your
no,
burn
no,
accident.
But stay with me for my point though.
All right, okay.
At least for that 20 minutes or whatever it was all encompassing. You couldn't think about nothing else. You couldn't fucking compare, do anything else. All you could think about was, motherfuck, does my face hurt?
Well, I was bleeding like a motherfucker,
but,
too.
But that's my point.
Yeah.
Any accident is all consuming. Any accident is all consuming. So if you have two choices once you have an accident, you can either suck it the fuck up and move on, or you can whine about it like a cunt. And I chose never to whine about it like a cunt, and I don't whine about it now. You know, I mean, could I? Sure. Could I be one of those guys that fucking throws up a Patreon all the time and throws some tears in a video and fucking, if you guys could just give me $400,000 more, I'll be able to get, I don't want to be that faggot. I don't want to be that guy.
I think you should set up a Patreon for one thing. Set up a Patreon and the Classic Metal fans can donate to you buying a couple bottles of Jack Fire to go hang out with Kelly.
Nah, how about they just fucking buy the books?
Well, that's true.
I'd rather give them a product. I don't want to do Patreon.
Look, you're getting all serious. Would you rather have bottles of booze or people buying your books?
People buying my books. Honestly, people
You've already
buy
made
my books.
Your money, really?
People, dude, it's not about the money. I don't give a fuck about the money.
That's what I'm saying. You've already made your money off the books. So
if
the CMS fans would donate to you so you could buy the booze,
I don't ever want
to go hang out with Kelly.
I don't ever want anybody to give me anything that I didn't give them something for.
Well, now that's
ever.
Very true. That's very true.
And I mean, you know that about me, dude.
Oh, dude,
I never want to borrow money. I never want to owe anybody money. I never want to.
Well, I mean, you and I personally, how many times has that come up?
Yeah.
You know?
Don't do it. When I'm out of money, when business is slow or whatever, I fucking close the door.
Yeah.
I lock the door and I don't go anywhere for two, three, 4 weeks. If that's the case, you know, I don't want anybody to bail me out. I could go to people, as many people as I've loaned money to. I certainly could go to people and say, hey, loan me $500 to get me through, blah, 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 blah.
I mean, me and Steph are the first and foremost examples, I would think.
I never do it.
Yeah,
I don't definitely. Do it because to me, I've withstood more. There's nothing, bills not being paid, losing a house, you know, losing a car. That shit is always going to be fucking minor league to me. I'm never going to care. I'm never going to be like, oh, my life is ruined because the guy from the mortgage company took my house.
Right. Nah. That's why I asked earlier, do you think like your life is completely different because of the accident?
In a good way.
You know?
Dude, believe me, I'll put it this way. I wouldn't wish the pain that I had to go through on anybody. On fucking Scotty's ex-wife, who's the person I hate the most in the world.
Besides Ben Roethlisberger?
I'd suck Ben Roethlisberger's dick before I'd say something nice to Scotty's ex-wife.
Wow.
I fucking...
That's pretty extreme.
I hate his ex-wife. I hate her more than anybody in the world.
Well, that is a five-figure kind of discussion, so anyway.
I hate her. Hate her, hate her, hate her. But I wouldn't wish that on him.
Right.
I mean, the level of pain... I mean, think about whatever the most painful thing that's ever happened in your life, the immediate second that it happened, and it stayed with me all over every bit of my body for fucking 14 months. never subsided, never stopped. No amount of pain medicine could make it go away.
Right.
I mean, I was doing full morphine bags, 2-3 a day in the hospital, and it didn't stop any fucking pain. It just made me too fucking fucked up to fight it.
Right.
So I wouldn't wish the pain on anybody, but I'll be damned if it did not make me fucking stellar fucking rugged. You know, I mean, I've been able to, I'll put my resume since 94 against anybody. Well, I'll put it against anybody, you know?
Obviously.
I mean, I've built two businesses from scratch, two legitimate businesses that make six figures. Two that I run simultaneously. Not that I have other people run, that I run myself. In between doing this every single Saturday, which I never miss, you know, very rarely do I ever miss the show. And I've written 4 fucking books in 5 years. And I've got 2 more that are almost done. You know, if somebody wants to bring it on to me and say, well, I do this. Come on. Come on, bitch boy.
Right.
I'll take that challenge any day of the week. You know, it's just, and I like that. I like that people could say I'm this or that. Oh, he's a big fat ass, or he's a fucking loudmouth, or he's a fucking, you know, foul mouth dick, or he's an asshole or whatever. Can't call me lazy. No one at my funeral will ever say, man, that guy didn't do very much, did he? No one will say that. And that's all I want. I've given the good example to my kids.
I don't know if you're even going to have a funeral.
Party.
I was going to say, like, you've always said, like, just you know, roach me. I'll be a pile of ashes.
That's fine.
Fuck it. Like,
fine. I've told the kids not to even claim the body. Don't even waste the money on claiming the body. Potter's Field, baby. I don't give a fuck. I don't care. See, I'm dead.
How much of an incredible segue would that be if you didn't have the music already set up?
Oh, to go right to Potter's Field?
Exactly. No. Since we talked about Anthrax earlier.
Why don't we play music?
Yeah, let's do that.
I've been rambling for long enough about this shit.
We were supposed to talk about books, and then we ended up... talk about books, yeah, and we talked about your book.
Mine. Well, let's play music. Let's go with Out of Fury's on next Saturday with Neely and I will be this band. Tough. Tough will be out there. They had an album called What Goes Around Comes Around. They redid it called What Goes Around Comes Around Again because that was necessary. And I'm going to play a tune. I'm going to play the title track. It also features Stephen Piercy and Jeff Loomis.
Nice. Oh, goddamn, Jeff Loomis. Nice.
So that's pretty good company for Stevie to pull. So let's play that right now. This is What Comes Around Goes Around. It's Tough right here
on your classic metal show.
Now that's a parking spot.
Introducing the I may have underestimated the size of my car policy with accident forgiveness from American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote. Find an agent. Visit AmFam.com.
Optional policy features not included in base policies. Review policy for coverages and exclusions. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.